वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 एंटाइटल्ड महाराज निमी मीट्स द नाइन योगेंद्रस टेक्स्ट नंबर 41
खं वायमग्निं सलिलं महिं च वायुमग्निं सलिलं महिं च ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादीन् ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादीन् सरित्समुद्रंश्च हरेर्सरि शरीरम् सरित् समुद्रम् च हरे शरीरम् यत्किं च भूताम् प्रणमेद् अनन्या खं वायुमग्निम् सलिलम् महिम् च ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादिन् सरित् समुद्रम् च हरेर् शरीरम् यत्किं च भूताम् प्रणमेद् अनन्या खं वायुमग्निम् सलिलम् महिम् च ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादिन् ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादिन् समुद्रं च हरे शरीरम् यत्किं च भूतां प्रणमेदनन्या वायुमग्निं सलिलं महिं च ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादीन् यत्किं च भूतां कं वायुमग्निं सलिलं महिं च ज्योतिंषि सत्त्वानि दिशो द्रुमादिन् सरित् समुद्रान् हरे शरीरम् यत्किं च भूतां प्रणमेदनन्या यत्किं च भूतां प्रणमेदनन्या
खम् इथ वायुम् एर् अग्निम् फायर सलीलम वॉटर महिम अर्थ च एंड ज्योतिंसी द सन मून एंड अदर सेलेस्टियल ल्यूमिनरीज सत्वानी ऑल लिविंग बीइंग्स दिशा द डायरेक्शंस द्रुमादीन ट्रीज एंड अदर इमूवेबल क्रिएचर्स सरेत the rivers, samudran and oceans, cha also, hare of the Supreme Lord Hari, shariram the body, yat kim cha whatever, bhutam in created existence, pranamet
one should bow to. Ananya, thinking nothing to be separate from the Lord. Translation. A devotee should not see anything as being separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Ether, fire, air, water, earth, the sun, and other all living beings, the directions, trees and other plants, the rivers and oceans, whatever a devotee experiences, he should consider to be an expansion of Krishna. Thus seeing everything that exists within creation as the body of the Supreme Lord Hari, the devotee should offer his sincere respects to the entire expansion of the Lord's body. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So this purport is a very, very long purport, and we have been discussing this verse for the last 2 days. So this is the third day we are discussing the same verse, so I am reading the last part of the purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has warned us that if we do not see everything as a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we shall become victims of Falgu Vairagya or pure renunciation. Whatever we see as disconnected from Krishna will have in our mind no relationship to Krishna's service. But if we see everything as connected to Krishna, we shall use everything for Krishna's satisfaction. This is called Yukta Vairagya. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one who has experienced his own true identity understands that all things exist as paraphernalia for giving ecstatic pleasure to the Supreme Lord. Thus, one becomes free from the separatist vision in which one sees the world as existing for one's own enjoyment. In the transcendental state, whatever a devotee sees reminds him of Krishna, and thus his transcendental knowledge and bliss increase. Because the impersonalist philosophers fail to see everything as belonging to the personal form of Krishna, they reject this world as having no true existence, Jagan Mithya. But since the material world is an emanation from the Supreme Reality, Krishna, it does in fact exist. Its non-existence is simply a creation of the imagination, and one cannot possibly act on such an imaginary platform. Therefore, having proposed an illusory theory and being able to live on such a platform, the impersonalist comes back to the material platform for altruistic or gross sense gratificatory activities. Since the impersonalist does not accept the personal proprietorship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he does not know how or whom to engage the things of this world. And since it is impossible to reject the world totally while living within it, he runs the risk of again becoming entangled in the material fruitive activities. Therefore, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 12.5, Klesho Adhikarastesham, the impersonal path of imaginary philosophy is very painful to follow. The conclusion is that this verse is spoken to a devotee of the Supreme Lord, advanced in Krishna consciousness. It can be understood from the previous verses of this chapter that the ultimate goal is pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. If one falsely interprets this verse to sanction the imaginary Mayavad philosophy that everything is God, one will simply become bewildered and fall from the path of spiritual advancement.
Omagyantimirandasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam Vandeham shri guru shri yutaha padakamalam Shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan సహగణా లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానో సుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంచాకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర్ శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ రామ హరే హరే
హరే కృష్ణ లెట్ టు వెల్కమ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ యు ఆల్ ఫార్ ది సండే భాగవతం క్లాస్ సీకింగ్ ద బ్లెస్సింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ది డివోటీస్ సో ఐ కెన్ స్పీక్ సంథింగ్ వాల్యుబుల్ ఆన్ దిస్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ వర్స్ ఆఫ్ ది శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం సో దిస్ వర్స్ బిగిన్స్ విత్ ఆర్ రాదర్ దిస్ సెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ద పర్పోర్ట్ బిగిన్స్ విత్ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్ థాకూర్స్ వార్నింగ్ Bhakti Siddhanta is warning us that if we don't see everything as a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we become victims to what is known as Falgu Vairagya or immature renunciation. And whatever we see disconnected from Krishna will have in our mind no relationship to Krishna's service. But if we see everything connected to Krishna, and we use it for Krishna's satisfaction, it is known as Yukta Vairagya. So, most people in this world are attached to the concept of money and wealth. So for them, everything revolves around money. For those who are in the previous section in this purport, it talks about, you know, mindsets. So, when somebody's mindset is fixed on something, that person can only see that thing everywhere. Like a pure devotee can only see Krishna everywhere. A materialistic person can only see money everywhere. One time there was a man who had a very complicated problem and he went to a psychiatrist. And he said that, my problem is that when I sleep in the night on the bed, I constantly keep having this feeling that somebody is under me, you know, below the bed. So I keep looking down below the bed to see if somebody is there, but nobody is there. And if I go and sleep below the bed, I keep feeling that somebody is on top of the bed. So he says, whole night I go up and down, and I don't sleep only. The psychiatrist told him, I give a very simple solution. But you have to come to me every week, 2 times a week, and every time you come to me, you have to pay me 10,000 rupees. This guy went back, and next day he called up the psychiatrist and said, I have solved the problem permanently. I cut the legs of the bed only. So bed is on the ground, so I don't get any feeling of somebody is below me. So when a materialistic person is asked to shell out money, it's very difficult. Because for him, obsession is money. So he sees money everywhere. For a devotee, seeing Krishna everywhere is very easy. And that's the natural mood of a devotee. So there's a very interesting analysis of the connection between renunciation and devotion. So it is said, when devotion is a small girl, the concept of bhakti, it is just in the immature stage, when it's in the younger stage. So, when devotion is a small girl, she always thinks of ways of attaining God as toys, or ways to play with God. That's the mood in which one connects with Krishna. Small children like to play with toys. So if you want to give Krishna consciousness to a small child, give them Krishna conscious toys. Prabhupada had once a dream of having a factory of producing Gauranitai toys, you know, because he thought that is the best way to give Krishna to young children. So when devotion is a little girl, she thinks of ways of attaining God as toys and play with them. So when devotion attains maturity, she considers Krishna as her greatest wealth,
God has a greatest wealth. When the moment she considers Krishna as her greatest wealth, she gives birth to a child, which is knowledge. And when knowledge reaches youth, devotion gives birth to another child, which is renunciation or asceticism, vairagya. So the younger brother is vairagya and the older brother is knowledge. So when asceticism or renunciation reaches a maturity, then the Lord wants to see that devotee. Lord personally comes to see the devotee. So when there is a combination of these three elements, devotion, knowledge and renunciation, then the Lord becomes mad about that person, about that devotee. So spiritual life is a combination of two things, the knowledge element and the tolerance element. These two things combined together is called renunciation. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahmaji speaks about this this beautiful prayer where he says, Tattenu kampam susimikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. He tells that when a devotee actually goes through difficulties in his life, when he goes through problems in his life, and whatever he goes through in his life, he sees everything that happens in his life as Krishna's mercy. And he is grateful to the Lord from within his heart. No matter what happens, good or bad, a devotee wants to see everything with the eyes of gratitude. And he sees Krishna's hand behind everything. So this is the knowledge element. But in spite of having knowledge, ultimately when you go through difficulties, what do? Like the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjun, gives him entire philosophy of Gita. But Krishna, right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he speaks this very beautiful verse, Matras parshastu kaunteya sitoshna sukadukkada agama payano nityas tam tirikshasva bharata. He tells Arjun, my dear Arjun, I am going to tell you full philosophy, full knowledge, by which you will understand that you should fight. But after gaining this entire knowledge that you are not the body or spirit soul, everything else, ultimately when you kill your relatives, it will pain you. And that pain, you have to tolerate it. There is no other option. So right from the beginning, Krishna is telling Arjun that I may tell you many things, but ultimately the pain that you will experience when you engage in this war is something that you have to tolerate yourself. Which essentially means, Krishna consciousness, there is great knowledge available. Tattena kambam shishmakshamana. So a devotee can give big philosophy and speak big philosophy and speak great knowledge of Gita and Bhagavatam. But when he goes through pain in his life, ultimately the devotee has to learn to tolerate. Matras parshastu kaunteya. So both these together, the knowledge element and the tolerance element together is what is known as renunciation or the correct understanding of vairagya. So essentially, the Srimad Bhagavatam talks about two types of devotees, two types of renunciants. The Ambarish type of renunciant, and then there's a Durvas type of renunciant. The tendency to impress people is very much there in every living entity. And generally, that desire to impress, desire to, really gain people's attention is such a craving in a living entity's heart. I remember in my college days, there was a boy who was like 1 year senior to us. And this guy who would come with a bike to the college. And he had like this really loud bike. I am sure you heard of these. In the middle of the night, they scream and go on the road, Really loud bikes. So this fellow had this one of these bikes. And every day he would come at a particular time into the college. And our college had a long pathway, basically. And this guy from the gate, through the long pathway, with full throttle, he would ride the bike and come. And right when he is in the end, he would lift the front wheel, So that marked the thing that I have come today to college. So every time I would see this fellow coming in the bike, and I would hear the sound of the bike, according to me, it was the sound of his ego screaming, I have come, please give me attention, That's the nature of the false ego. It demands for attention. So, when somebody practices austerity should generally make the heart soft. But Sometimes when people practice austerity, they become like a touch me not plant, you know. Dhruvas Muni is like a touch me not plant. You touch him, he shrinks or shrivels or blasts, you know. So sometimes practicing austerities or practicing the concept of renunciation with the wrong mood, with the wrong understanding, it makes one very, very hard-hearted. And therefore, it is very important to learn to practice the process of renunciation in the way Ambarish Maharaj was practicing. Can you imagine Ambarish Maharaj was, he had renounced food, he had renounced water, he had renounced practically all kinds of comforts for 48 days continuously was fasting. I mean, that's a lot of austerity. For us to do one day nirjal fast itself is like too much, you know. And 48 days of nirjal fast is really too much. And generally, next day morning up when you break the nirjal fast and you are standing in a line for limbu sharbat, you know, people are in a highly irritated mood, you know. I mean, generally, if something goes wrong, the taste of the limbu sharbat is wrong, or if somebody who is serving is slow, there's a lot of tendency to get irritated, you know. Fast, fast, right? Because when you practice austerity, and in, especially if you practice in the wrong mood, the tendency is to, it reflects in the form of irritation, it reflects in the form of, you know, having the wrong attitude and qualities. So Ambarish Maharaj, in spite of practicing this kind of austerities, he was still in the mood of seeing only good in others. In spite of so much, Ambarish Maharaj actually saw good in Dhruvas Muni. One time in Yogapeet, where Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasakur's Gaudiya Math was, there was one devotee, cook, he died. So when this devotee cook died, everybody in the ashram, all the brahmacharis in the ashram, they said, thank God he died, you know. Because that fellow used to really trouble everyone, really harass everyone, you know. So Bhaktisiddhanta heard these people saying that, and then he came to them and he asked them, is there any one good quality in this cook that you saw? At least one good quality. So one devotee said, the one good quality I saw in this cook was that his dhoti was always clean. White, shining dhoti he would wear. So Bhaktisiddhanta, see, that's it. That's it. One good quality in a person is good enough to meditate on. But generally we meditate on all the bad qualities and we forget that one good quality that a person has. So essentially, when the false ego is hurt, it burns very intensely. Many of the pastimes of in the scriptures is actually there to show us, to rather remind us or make us contemplate whether we are practicing devotion in the right mood or not. So many times, apparently on an external level, we are practicing devotional service. But sometimes on an internal level, the mood is just not right. Just not the best mood of practicing spiritual life. And therefore, we find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was discussing with Keshava Kashmiri, and Keshava Kashmiri was speaking all these brilliant analysis of Mother Ganga. He spoke 100 verses one after another on Mother Ganga. So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these 100 verses of Mother Ganga, he could find defects in those verses. So essentially, Mahaprabhu was not finding defects in the verses of Keshava Kashmiri, but rather he was finding defects in his ego, in the way his mood was. So a spiritualist works at two levels. On one level, he finds, even if there is little good, he focuses on that good only. And then on the other level, if he finds a little ego, he focuses on that only. So here we find one story of Bhaktisiddhanta, saw so many bad, but he focused on one good. And here, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were so many good qualities in Keshava Kashmiri, but there was one small ego. Mahaprabhu tried to focus on that aspect. And that is how spiritual life has to be practiced at both ends. So, when we talk about renunciation, it's actually about purification of the heart. So purification of the heart is more important than external just manifestation of this concept of renunciation. Externals ultimately don't matter. It is a consciousness which you practice really matters. Dhruvas Muni on an external level was a strict sadhu. And Ambarish Maharaj was a king. But still the consciousness they had was exactly opposite to each other. And Ambarish Maharaj naturally could forgive Dhruvas Muni. But Durvas Muni, he just couldn't forgive Ambarish. What did Ambarish do? He drank 3 drops of water before Durvas Muni came. And Durvas Muni made a big thing out of it. And what did Ambarish Maharaj do? Durvas Muni sent a demon to kill him. Durvas Muni was practically trying to murder Ambarish Maharaj. And in spite of that, Ambarish Maharaj didn't take grudge at all. He just forgave Durvas Muni. Many times, forgiveness is considered to be one of the biggest qualities that a devotee can manifest in his life. So many times, we hold intense grudges in our hearts. And these grudges we hold for decades and decades together.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people who have grudges for like 30 years, 40 years against somebody. But when we hold these grudges in our heart, what does it show us? It shows our inability to forgive. Ambarish Maharaj, when Durvas Muni did all that to him, Ambarish Maharaj did not need to go to some, you know, therapy sessions where he had to learn to let go of his anger, let go of his, you know, frustration, hatred. So he didn't go through all this. He just automatically and very naturally forgave Durvas Muni. And that is the mood of a great devotee of the Lord. Here in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are finding a very interesting thing that is being shared here by Narad Muni to Vasudev. The concept that is being discussed over here is how a devotee sees Krishna's hand everywhere. A devotee sees God in every element and every aspect of life. One time, Srila Prabhupada was going through in a car, and it was a very intense weather. Rain, thunderstorm, lightning. And the devotees who were driving, they were struggling a lot to drive the car properly, you know. And so they were just cursing the rain. Saying, what nonsense, why it has to rain now? And, you know, so much inconvenience for Srila Prabhupada, and so difficult to drive and all that. And suddenly Prabhupada started saying, he revealed a totally different way of seeing it. He said, actually, rain is very pleasing. Without rain, there can be nothing on earth. And Prabhupada was talking about the glory of, you know, having good rains. So the devotees are completely amazed that Prabhupada, such a terrible weather, he was able to see the element of Krishna being manifested through this rain. One time Srila Prabhupada was sitting on the ground in a garden, and it was a cold winter day and the winds were blowing. So somebody came to Prabhupada and they offered a chadar. Prabhupada said, no, don't worry. This wind, this cool wind, it feels like the embrace of Krishna. And then some devotee offered a mat under Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, don't worry. This feels like I'm sitting on Krishna's lap. So pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada could actually see Krishna's manifestation in different ways in this world. One who has experienced his true identity understands that all things that exist are paraphernalia for giving pleasure to the Supreme Lord. So here, this concept that is spoken about in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam talks about how everything that is there in life, we see it in connection with Krishna. So many times, when we don't see the connection with Krishna, and we are too much attached to this physical self, to the body, such a person is not called a spiritualist. In the Mahabharata, we find that Ashwatthama, so Bhishma is making an analysis of different people, and in the just before the war. And two people, he gave the rating of Ardharati. Ardharati means half a warrior. They are not even qualified to be called proper warriors. So one was Karna, and other was Ashwatthama. So the reason Bhishma called Ashwatthama Ardharati was because he was too much attached to the body. For a Kshatriya, too much attachment to the body is bad. Of course, too much attachment to the body is bad for anybody. But especially for a Kshatriya, you know. A Kshatriya should not have fear of dying. So if a Kshatriya starts thinking, "Arey, what will happen to me? I will die," you know, then there is no point in going to war only. So Ashwatthama was too much attached to the body, and therefore Bhishma said he is an Ardharathi. So Ashwatthama was a Chiranjeevi. That means he can never die. So technically he was a Chiranjeevi, but he had no faith in that fact. So he was always afraid of dying. I mean, can you imagine? If a Chiranjeevi gets afraid of dying, what about you and me, you know? So therefore, Bhishma called him as Ardharati. So which essentially means, spiritual life is not something that is like a museum piece. It is something that you're supposed to practice in your life every single day. So Bhagavad Gita does not talk about gross laws, but it talks about subtle principles of life. And therefore, in the Gita, Krishna speaks about how the Gita has to be practiced every day in your life. He says, Vita raga bhaya krodha manmaya mam upashritaha bahavo jnana tapasa puta madbhavam agataha. So he says, by practicing these principles, so many principles that he speaks about, especially being freed from attachment, fear and anger, and being fully absorbed in Krishna and taking full refuge of Krishna, Krishna says there are many people, bahavo jnana tapasa. He says there are many people in the past who have perfected their life. That means, spiritual life is not a rare thing. It is meant for everybody and anybody to practice. It's not that only some people can practice and others can't. Krishna says, bahavo jnana tapasa. Many, many people in the past have perfected their life by practicing spiritual life. And therefore, the way in which we should practice spiritual life is by seeing Krishna everywhere. In the 10th chapter, the Chatushloki Gita, Krishna speaks about, Aham sarvasa pravo matas sarvam pravartate, iti matva bhajante imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says, Aham sarvasa pravo, I am there everywhere. But how do you see me everywhere? He says, you have to use your buddhi, buddha, and bhava, emotions. To see Krishna everywhere, to understand the fact that Aham sarvasa pravo, Krishna is everywhere, you have to use your intelligence, buddhi, and also you'd actually feel Krishna. You'd use your emotions. So spiritual life is not just about using intelligence. And spiritual life is not just about using emotions. It is a combination of intelligence with emotions. So therefore, we need to intellectually understand that Krishna is everywhere. But along with intellectually understanding that Krishna is everywhere, we need to learn to experience Krishna everywhere. And that is what real spiritual life is about. One question can be seen and answered in many ways. And there are some very tough questions that spiritual life makes us ask. And if you go to different parts of spirituality, you'll get the answer to the same question in different ways. That's very interesting. The truth, the same truth, can be perceived in many ways. Like for example, there are three very important questions for every spiritualist to get the answer for. The first question is, where have you come from? The second question is, where are you going? And the third question is, what is the purpose of life? If this question is asked to different types of people, they will give different answers. If you ask this question to Charvak Muni, somebody like Charvak, you know, who is a highly, you know, materialistic type of person, his answer is, where have you come from? I have come from my uncle's place. Where are you going to? I am going to the market. And what is the purpose of life? Buy fish, you know, or buy ghee, whatever, you know. So, for a gross materialistic person whose purpose of life is to enjoy, he can just see practical. This, that's it. For somebody who is a philanthropist, or somebody who wants to do something good for the world, you ask him the same question. Where have you come from? I've come from my parents. I'm grateful to them. Where are you going? I'm going to the destiny of my life. What my life destines me to do. And what is the purpose of life? My purpose of life is to contribute a lot towards people. You ask a Mayavadi or you ask a monist the same question. Where have you come from? I have come from completeness. Where are you going to? I am going to completeness. And what is the purpose of life? To experience completeness in every step of life is the purpose of life. You know, it's how a Mayavadi speaks. And you ask a Buddhist or a voidist. Where have you come from? I have not come. Where are you going? I am not going. And what is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is nothing. Nothing is the purpose of life. This is how a voidist would speak. You ask somebody who is a karma yogi, like say Janak Maharaj, somebody like that. Where have you come from? I have not come only. Krishna has brought me here. You know, somebody who is a karma yogi would say like that. And where are you going?
I am not going anywhere. I am just an instrument. What is the purpose of life? To be used as an instrument of God is the purpose of life. And if you ask a devotee, from a devotee's point of view, these three questions are very different. Bhishma, at the end of his life, when he was dying, when Krishna came in front of him, interestingly, Krishna made Yudhishthir ask him a lot of questions. And Bhishma gave a lot of answers to Yudhishthir. But Krishna never asked Bhishma any question. And Bhishma never told Krishna any answer. Between Krishna and Bhishma, there was only one discussion. Krishna smiled at Bhishma, and Bhishma smiled at Krishna. That's it. That was the mood between them. So essentially, for a devotee, everything revolves around his remembrance of Krishna. For Bhishma, all his answers were just in Krishna's presence in front of him. And all the questions that Krishna had to ask was just seeing Bhishma looking at him and remembering him very intensely. And therefore, from a devotee's point of view, these questions really don't have so much significance, because the devotee understands everything from the perspective of connecting with Krishna and seeing Krishna in his life. Therefore, in this purport, it is explained, in a transcendental state, whatever a devotee sees reminds him of Krishna, and thus his transcendental knowledge and bliss increases. Like for example, when a devotee sees anything in this world, like for example, if he sees a marriage happening, and instantly he is reminded of Krishna's marriage with Rukmini, he is reminded of Krishna's marriage with so many of the queens of Dwaraka. One devotee was saying very interestingly that every marriage that Krishna had, before the marriage there was a war, but after the marriage there was peace. But in today's marriages, before the marriage there is peace, after the marriage there is war. So at least when you see a marriage ceremony happening, we can remember Krishna's marriage, Hopefully some peace will prevail afterwards, So when someone is convinced of the existence of God, that person can see God in every situation of life. Like for example, there was one atheist, and this atheist was, trying to convince one lady that atheism is good and God really doesn't exist. So he tried to explain to her a lot of things, but she never understood. So he said, let me do something practical. So one day he put a lot of grocery in front of her house and he hid behind a tree and, was waiting. So this lady, when she opened the door, she saw all this grocery, so many things over there. And she started saying, thank God you supply me so much today. So this fellow jumped out, the atheist jumped out, and he said, see, God didn't supply, I put it over here. God doesn't exist. So this lady said, God, you are so great that you have not only sent supplies, but you made an atheist pay the bill also. So somebody who has a desire to see God, he can see God in everything and every situation of life. But when a materialistic person sees every situation of life, he tends to see sense gratification in every situation of life. Even in the deepest of philosophies, a materialistic person somehow or the other sees sense gratification. There was one person, he went to a holy man. And he asked him, can you give me some knowledge? Some gyan. And this holy man said that every living entity in this world has a soul, atma inside. Even animals have soul, which is why even animals do good to others. This man immediately said, oh yeah, I totally agree to this. I have this experience. Once a fish saved my life. This holy man was surprised. He said, I never heard of the fish saving somebody's life. Can you tell me the story? This fellow said, one day I was traveling a lot and I was so desperately dying of thirst and dying of hunger and I was just going to faint. And I saw a big lake and I ran to drink water in that lake. So the holy man said, oh, did you fall into the water and fish saved you from drowning? The man said, no, nothing like that. He said, I saw the water, inside the water I saw the fish. I caught the fish and ate it. That's how the fish saved my life. Can you imagine? So sometimes, when people who are materialistic in nature, they just can't get it. They just can't get deep philosophy. Because in everything, they're looking at what is in it for me. For in everything, they're looking at what selfish interest of mine can this philosophy serve. Krishna is within every living entity as a Paramatma. And he is outside the living entity in the form of Kala, or the time factor. When we absorb ourselves in the personal form of Krishna, which is within our own hearts, and we also can see the manifestation of Krishna all around us, the more we absorb ourselves in the personal form of the Lord, we won't be affected by the time factor of Krishna which is around us. And therefore, for a devotee, he sees constantly every opportunity as a chance for him to connect with the Paramatma. Like for example, when a devotee goes to sleep, how does the body gets rejuvenated totally? Like all of us have this experience, like totally exhausted, totally tired, eyes are dying to sleep literally, and then you sleep for a couple of hours and you get up, you feel totally rejuvenated. What is the factor that actually helps us rejuvenate? One devotee was saying that actually because the living entity associates with the Paramatma for the entire night, the Paramatma within the living entity's body actually rejuvenates and energizes the living entity completely. And that's the reason we really feel completely energized all day. All day long we are running around all over and we have no time for the Paramatma. We have absolutely no time for Krishna within our own hearts. But in the night, we are actually doing nothing. Just lying there and the Paramatma is acting on us. So today is a very special day for many reasons. If you see in the altar, there are some two very beautiful darshans. We have over here on Gopalji's altar, we have the darshan of Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. Today is Gopalji has a Toyam Priya. Actually, he's a lover of water. So, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita speaks about this beautiful concept of Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. These four things that we can actually meditate on. So, when Krishna says, offer these four things to me, he is also talking about, just look at these four things. And when you look at these four things, meditate on me. When we look at a fruit, we should meditate on Krishna. When we look at a flower, we should meditate on Krishna. When we look at a leaf, we should meditate on Krishna. When we look at some water, we should meditate on Krishna. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita, the entire Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us so many examples from nature. How we can meditate on Krishna just by seeing nature. Practically every element of nature Krishna has covered in the Gita. That means you look at the sun, you can meditate on Krishna. You get electricity, you can meditate on Krishna. You look at the moon, you can meditate on Krishna. You look at the sky, you can meditate. So practically you can meditate on Krishna when you look at anything and everything in this world. And that is how it is supposed to be. Because in every element, there is a presence of Krishna in it. When we talk about meditating on Patram, we will take one story of each of these four aspects of Krishna. Offering Krishna a leaf. One time, Narad Muni went to Dwaraka and he met Satyabhama, who was one of the queens of Dwaraka. And he told Satyabhama, they were having a discussion. And Narad Muni told Satyabhama that, I can do something that will make Krishna really dear to you. Satyabhama said, of course, anything for, Krishna only being attracted to me. So Narad Muni said, I'll tell you a very simple trick. You actually offer Krishna to me. Say that you have given me Krishna. And I'll give you back Krishna if you can offer all your gold to me. The weight of Krishna's body. Offer me that much gold. And Krishna will see that you're not attached to any of the gold. You're only interested in him. And he will love you lots. So Satyabhama agreed. Because she thought it was a very simple affair. Krishna's weight in gold. She has that much gold definitely. So then Narad Muni, she offered Krishna to him. And Krishna said, Narad Muni said, I'm going to take Krishna away from you now. Satyabhama said, no, don't take. I will offer you that much gold. And then Krishna was made to sit on a tula bar, a weighing scale. Satyabhama's gold was put on this side. No matter how much gold she put on this side, Krishna's weight just was too much. I mean, when Krishna invokes the weight of the universe within him, there is no possibility that anything can overweigh him. And on the other side, all the gold of Satyabhama is still not enough. Satyabhama realized she made a big mistake. And then she started asking other queens, please help me, we need to save Krishna, Narad Muni will take him away. That all the queens started putting all their gold. This unlimited amount of gold, still the weight of Krishna was much, much more. And finally, Rukmini Devi was called, and Rukmini Devi brought a very small, tiny leaf of Tulsi. And she offered that on one scale, on the other scale. And instantly Krishna went way up. Because, you know, the weight of Tulsi's devotion is way, way higher than, you know, what Krishna can actually measure. Wealth means purchasing power, you know. So devotees have the wealth of devotion by which they can purchase Krishna also. And Rukmini Devi said, remove all your gold now. So they removed all the gold, and still that one Tulsi leaf was heavier than the entire weight of Krishna, you know. That's how powerful the weight of devotion is. When we cultivate this weight of devotion, Krishna becomes overpowered. He becomes purchased by the weight of devotion of Tulsi Maharani. One leaf, patram. So when Krishna is saying, patram pushpam valam doyam, he is talking about, give one Tulsi leaf at least. And that's not very difficult to give Krishna. And he talks about a meditation on pushpam, flower. When Indradumna Maharaj, who was a great king, in his previous life, before he became Gajendra, in his previous life as King Indradumna, he had a very interesting habit. Every single day, he would offer one golden lotus, 1,000-petal golden lotus to Lord Vishnu. Every day, that was his offering to the Lord. And because he every single day offered 1,000-petal golden lotus to Vishnu, and he chanted all these beautiful prayers, in the next life, when as Gajendra was struggling in that lake, fighting against the crocodile, can you imagine, in the entire lake, there was nothing, because the fight went on for thousands of years. The only thing that was available was one lotus leaf. That one lotus leaf, how did it come in that lake? It came in the lake because Indradumna had offered thousands and thousands of lotus leaves in the lotus flowers in the past. And therefore, Krishna arranged for one lotus flower to be present when he needed it the most. And that one lotus flower, Indradumna Maharaj offered it to the Supreme Lord back. So essentially, everything we have, patram pushpam phalam toyam, do you think it is, we make it? We don't make it at all. All these Chinese roses that we see in the market, you know, it may seem that a human being is manufacturing all these Chinese roses, but one thing a human being can never manufacture. In everything in nature, there is something which is the original property of that substance, and that is Krishna. In a flower, the original property of the flower is not the texture, not the color, not the feeling, not the look, but is the fragrance. The human being can manufacture a flower that looks perfect, but unfortunately, none of those flowers have smell, have good fragrance in them, you know. And that's one thing that is Krishna, that is only can be manufactured or rather produced or rather, you know, made by Krishna himself. And Indradumna Maharaj offered this flower to Krishna, and the meditation on a fruit. In Vrindavan, this is one of my favorite story, Leela. I like this story so much because of the beautiful simplicity with which this devotee really behaves with Krishna. There was this fruit seller, one lady from Mathura, who would come every day to Vrindavan to sell her fruits. And every day she would come and sell, you know, she would start shouting in the streets of Vrindavan, take my fruits, I have mangoes, bananas, apples, and she would shout. But one day she came across Brajavasis who told her about Krishna. And she got so attracted to Krishna's personality that she completely forgot about her fruits. So every day when she would bring a basket of fruits to Vrindavan and she would sell the fruits, instead of saying mangoes, apples, bananas, she would start saying Govinda, Madhava, Damodara, she would start shouting Krishna's names throughout the streets of Vrindavan. She was doing Nagar Sankirtan in Vrindavan. So she was hoping that one day Krishna will see her. So she would just roam around Nandagaon area. She would be just roaming around Krishna's house, hoping that Krishna will come someday. She will get to have darshan of Krishna. But somehow Krishna never came out. For a couple of days she kept coming every day. At some point she decided that tomorrow if Krishna doesn't come out, I will leave my body in Vrindavan only. I will never come back. So then she came and she was outside Nandabhavan, intensely shouting out Krishna's names. And Krishna, he felt, I want to buy fruits today. Suddenly he felt that urge, you know. So Krishna ran out of his house. Krishna was a very tiny child. And as he ran out of the house, while running, he had seen his mother buy fruits. And Krishna knew there was a barter system. I need to give something to get something.
you want something, you need to give something. You know? So Krishna ran out and he picked up in his fist a handful of grains, rice. And as he ran out, tiny hands with no really grip, you know, Krishna can grip the entire world, but at this point of time, he was not able to grip grains of rice. And as he was running out, between his fingers, all the grains of rice started slipping off. And by the time he actually reached her, there was just one or two grains left. And when he reached her, he said, I want to buy fruits. And this lady was completely mesmerized. She sat on the ground, just staring at Krishna, looking so beautiful. And she told him, what will you give me if I give you fruits? Krishna said, I have lots of grains to give you. And he opened his fingers. There's practically nothing in it. Krishna was surprised. He was shocked. I got so much grains. This lady said, doesn't matter. I'll give you all the fruits, but on one condition. She said, call me mother once. And I'll give you all the fruits you want. Now Krishna was really scared. Because his mother had told him not to talk to strangers. And here he was talking to a complete stranger, you know. And she was telling him to call her mother on top of that. So Krishna started looking here and there just to make sure nobody is looking at him. And suddenly he jumped into the lap of this lady and said, mother. And he jumped out. And he said, now give me fruits. This lady was completely bewildered. She was completely bewildered by this simple and sweet exchange with Krishna. And this lady, she was so touched in her heart that she removed all the fruits in the basket and put it on Krishna's hand. Krishna was holding all these fruits in both of his hands and he started jumping and dancing and happily went into the house. This lady remained seated over there all day long, till late evening. And somebody shook her and said, what are you doing here? It's night now, go from here. And then this lady got up, picked up a basket and she walked away. And as she reached the Yamuna River, she felt that her basket is heavy. And then she put the basket down and she saw the basket was filled with all kinds of jewels and rubies and diamonds. And when she looked at all those diamonds and rubies and all that, she has felt that this is nothing compared to what Krishna had given me. That one word, mother. You know. She says, all this is just useless. And she threw all those diamonds and jewels, all that into the Yamuna River. And she walked away. Can you imagine? So much for Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam. So we tell this story to talk about how Krishna can fill your basket with the, you know, all the wealth of the world. But those who actually receive that wealth that Krishna gives, they're not really interested in the wealth of the world. They're interested in that one small exchange with Krishna. And that's the weight of devotional service. And that's the weight of, you know, what you can offer Krishna. Those diamonds and those beautiful jewels that lady saw in the basket, were nothing but manifestation of her devotional qualities in the form of those jewels. And then meditation on Toyam, which is today's theme over here. You know, when we look at the river Ganga, and the Ganga is flowing beautifully, many people go to the Ganga to have a bath, to purify them of their sins. But ideally, what is the way in which we should perceive Mother Ganga? There are 5 or 6 things that one should remember when we're having a bath in Mother Ganga. And that is the meditation on these holy river. When we look at these rivers are not just meant to cleanse away our sin. They are not like aqua guards, purifying agents, you know. One fellow goes in and comes out pure fellow now, you know. That's not the purpose of these rivers. These rivers are meant to help us contemplate on the higher purposes of life. And here are a couple of meditations that you can actually think about when we look at, when we are seeing these holy rivers. One is very important meditation of how this Mother Ganga is actually a mixture of many elements. When Vamanadev, he raised his feet to the shell of the universe, and the Vamanadev's feet penetrated the universe's shell, and the Karana ocean started flowing in. So the water actually started washing the feet of Vamanadev. And that water that washed the feet of Vamanadev came into the came below towards the heavenly planets. And while Vamanadev's feet was being washed by the water from the causal ocean, the Karana ocean, Lord Brahma, he also started off washing the feet of Vamanadev with his kamandalu, water from his kamandalu. So essentially, the water from the Karana ocean, the water from the kamandalu of Brahma mixed together, that forms what is known as the Mandakini Ganga that comes to the celestial worlds, heavenly planets. And from the heavenly planets, you know, Bhagirath, he invokes the Ganga and brings it to the earthly planets. And Lord Shiva holds it on his jata, on his head. And so essentially it means that it is also having the blessings of Lord Shiva's touch, you know. And then the Ganga falls down into the material world and comes into the into this world. And then in that Ganga are bathing all these great, amazing sadhus. Because the Ganga originates in the Himalayas. Before all the contamination that we put in through our bathing, the great sadhus who are in the Alaknanda, in all these higher realms of the material world, they are bathing. So Ganga is a combination of all these purifying agents that comes together. And that's the first meditation on Mother Ganga that we can have. The second meditation that we can have on Mother Ganga is that when we bathe in the Ganga, one should not bathe in the Ganga just from the point of view of I bathe in and I get purified. Every time we bathe in the Ganga, these rivers and these agents that are meant for purification, these agents act as agents that trigger our contemplation. So every time we have a bath in the Ganga, we should contemplate on all the sins and the wrong that we have done. And what actually purifies us is not just the bath in the Ganga, not just having a bath in the Ganga, but actually the contemplation of all the wrong that we have done. That contemplation actually purifies the proclivity to perform more sins in the future. The flowing river forces us to stop and contemplate on the force of flow of our life. Every time you sit on the banks of Ganga, the speed at which Ganga is going, it forces you to stop and think about the speed in which your life is going. So this force of the flowing Ganga should force us to pause and think about the speed and direction in which our life is going. The third thing that the river represents the temporary fleeting nature of this world and the consistent nature of legacy. Just as drops of water keep moving away, but the river stays. In life, situations and people may move away, but legacy stays. Leaders may move away, but leadership stays. Parents may move away, but their love and guidance stays. Teachers may move away, but education stays. Water of the Ganga moves away, but Ganga stays. And just as drops of water of a river may quench the thirst of many people, but the river has a personal thirst. What is the thirst of every river? The personal thirst of every river is to go and merge in the ocean. That is the goal of every river. So on the way, the river quenches thirst of hundreds and thousands of people, but it doesn't forget its goal. So all of us, as trying to preach the message of the Lord, trying to do some service for society, all that is fine. So you continue doing your quenching of thousands of people's thirst, but you don't forget your own goal. There are many people who get so absorbed in quenching other people's thirst that they forget their own goal. The river is quenching thousands of people's thirst. Ganga is quenching thousands of people's thirst. But it's intensely running towards its destination, which is the ocean. The river also represents the need to change with the passage of time. Just like new drops replace the old drops, new ideas should replace old ideas. Fresh innovation should replace, you know, outdated ones. Clear mindsets should replace polluted ones. And the river actually reminds us that in life we need to go ahead and drop the old things behind. That's the kind of meditation that we can have on Mother Ganga. The conclusion of this verse, it's mentioned in this purport, that this verse is spoken to help the devotees of the Supreme Lord advance in Krishna consciousness. Now, what is the meaning of help the devotees of the Lord advance in Krishna consciousness? There are four stories which are in the Ramayana, which really brings some amazing concepts to a spiritual pathway. I generally don't
speak Ramayana in Bhagavatam class, but because there is on the altar, Ram is so much prominent today, I am forced to speak something from the Ramayana. So Vishwamitra, as he was taking Ram Lakshman on their journey, they came across four incidents, and each of these four incidents reminds of one aspect that a devotee has to focus on in his spiritual life. So the first incident was the killing of Tataka. And each of these incidences have a solid significance of one of the qualities that we need to deal with or we need to handle in our own lives. It is explained that Tataka represents false hope in a person. Tataka and her sons were creating all kinds of obstacles in the sacrifice of Vishwamitra Muni. Sacrifice essentially means giving others, offering others. That is what the meaning of sacrifice is. But the biggest obstacle in sacrifice, in giving others, is Tataka. Which means that the biggest obstacle in sacrificing or giving others anything is the hope that they will give us back something in return. So hope is the biggest obstacle when we perform sacrifices, I mean, when we do something good for others. Every person who does something good for society or for the family or for somebody else expects something in return. And Tataka is explained in the Ramayana to be tall and huge, which explains that's how our expectations are. Tall and huge. So whenever we do anything for others, our expectation is huge. That's how our mind perceives things to be. So ideally, we should be contented with what we get. The entire Bhagavad Gita, if you look at study the Bhagavad Gita in its entirety, so many, I would say at least 50 or 60 verses where Krishna is speaking about expect no results for oneself. You know, do your activities expecting nothing for yourself, expecting nothing in return. But unfortunately, we have high expectations and we get upset when our expectations are not fulfilled. And that is how Tataka is. When we expect nothing from others except the Lord, then we can say Tataka is killed. Which essentially means that three things we should never have in this world. Hope, faith and trust. That means these three things we should never have in people of this world and in things of this world. These three things are exclusively meant for Krishna. And therefore, when we say that we should not have hope on anybody, we should not trust anybody, we should not have faith in anybody, except Krishna. Except Krishna, everybody else will let you down. So if you have any expectations, hopes, faith on people, rest assured you're going to be let down. And therefore, Tataka represents this huge personality who is filled with expectations. So the first thing that a devotee does, a truly intense devotee, is that he does not have false hopes from this world. So that is the first quality that a devotee should manifest in one's life. That means the nature of the mind is to be filled with hopes, filled with expectations. A devotee deals with the mind by having no expectations from people of this world, no hopes from people of this world. And only then a devotee is said to have killed Tataka. The second personality that they come across is Ahalya. And the deliverance of Ahalya actually signifies the way in which a devotee deals with the intelligence. So Lord Brahma created Ahalya to be extremely beautiful. And Indra wanted to marry Ahalya because she was so beautiful. But Brahma did not want to get Ahalya married to Indra. On the other hand, Brahma married Ahalya to Gautam Rishi, who was not really a very, you know, powerful personality. He was a simple, saintly person. So essentially, Brahmaji's thought was, Indra lives in the heaven and his focus is sense gratification. And Gautam Rishi lives in the forest and his focus is austerities. And therefore, he thought the best match for Ahalya, who represents intelligence, is not sense gratification, but it is austerity. That means intelligence should be married to austerities rather than intelligence should be married to sense gratification. Generally, the nature of intelligence is that the intelligence
seeks sense gratification. In fact, the intelligent philosophizes how one can actually have sense gratification when you are, when apparently you seem to be, it convinces you that you're practicing spiritual life, even when you're doing sense gratification. That's why when Indra came as Gautam Rishi, Ahilya accepted him. Why she accepted him? That is the nature of intelligence. The nature of intelligence is that the intelligence gets mesmerized by sense gratification proposals. And unfortunately, many times sense gratification comes disguised as spirituality. So many times we tend to get trapped by, say somebody wants to do some sense gratification activities. Say, Prabhupada drank 7-Up. So I can also drink. So intelligence has this great ability to somehow or the other find super reasons how sense gratification is actually spirituality only, So it tends to contemplate. And that is how Brahmaji felt that Ahilya should be married with Gautam Rishi. And of course, the intellect in the form of Indra, it deceives Ahilya. And how did Gautam Rishi help Ahilya deal with it? Gautam Rishi told Ahilya something very beautiful. He told her that I don't have the capacity to purify your corrupted intelligence. The only person who can help you purify your corrupted intelligence is Lord Ram himself. And therefore, when we first deal with false hope or expectation, that time Tataka is eradicated, deleted. Then when we deal with the intellect that is contaminated, and when we actually bring that in front of Lord Ram, that contaminated intelligence is purified. And the third thing that happens in this story is the breaking of Lord Shiva's bow. When Lord Ram breaks the bow of Lord Shiva, the bow indicates false ego and pride that arises out of false ego. So Ram, when he breaks the bow, in his face, so generally when Ram is always doing anything, he has a small smile on his face. He has a very faint smile. But when he was breaking the bow of Lord Shiva, he had no expression on his face at all. Blank. And before he broke the bow of Lord Shiva, he asked Vishwamitra Muni permission. And then he lifted the bow of Lord Shiva. It is explained that when Ram was breaking the bow of Lord Shiva, he was actually in this mood that I am not the doer. The blessings of my spiritual master, my guru, Vishwamitra Muni, is helping me break this bow, which represents the false ego. So it means the false ego cannot be broken by our own effort. We are not the doers. We can't break the false ego. We need the spiritual master to help us break the false ego. But unfortunately, in today's world, we want the spiritual master to fan our false ego, flare our false ego, rather than break the false ego. And if spiritual master breaks the false ego, we will file a suit on him, abusing us, Very dangerous world today, So anything spiritual master does for your purification, we tend to think that the spiritual master's fault it is, he can't discipline us. So when Lord Ram broke the bow of Lord Shiva, Lakshman asked him the question, why did you break the bow in between? You could have broken the bow in anywhere. He broke the bow in right in between. The bow represents something very important in our life. As I said, the bow represents the false ego. But where does ego arise? Ego doesn't arise in the beginning of life, and ego doesn't arise in the end of life. Birth and death, there is no ego. When you are born naked and you are crying. So there is no ego at that time. And when you are dying, again you are dying in a horrible situation. There is no ego, when somebody dies. In between there is a lot of ego. Pride comes in between your life. Therefore, Ram broke it right in between, indicating that the false ego has to be broken when it is at the peak of its fulfillment. And the last thing that Vishwamitra comes across in his journey is Lord Vishnu's bow. And the way Lord Ram dealt with Lord Vishnu's bow is that he pulled the bow towards himself. That means the fourth thing that we need to do in our spiritual lives on our journey is pull the Lord towards ourselves. So the other three things, Tataka has to be dealt by destroying Tataka. That means the false expectation has to be destroyed. The false ego has to be destroyed by breaking it.
And the intellect has to be married to austerities. And that is how we deal with the intellect. And the fourth thing, which is the bow, indicates that we need to pull the Lord into our lives. All the three things, the false expectations, we need the Lord for that. To deal with the false ego, we need the Lord for that. And we need to, and to deal with, which is the third thing? The intelligence, we need the Lord to help us purify our intelligence. And therefore, when we actually have all these three things, we can actually have Krishna in our lives. Seeing Krishna in our lives is not very easy. And therefore, we need the help of devotees to actually help us see Krishna in our lives. I'll tell one small story and I'll conclude. This is a very, very interesting story of Janmajay, who was Parikshit Maharaj's son. So Janmajay was a very, happened to become a very arrogant king. And Janmajay, Jaimini Rishi came to Janmajay's court. And Jaimini Rishi wanted to tell Janmajay the entire story of his great ancestors. He's not interested. He said, I have no time. So Jaimini Rishi said, you know, at least give me 1 minute. In 1 minute, I'll tell you everything what I need to tell and I'll go. Janmajay said, no problem. 1 minute, tell whatever you want and go from here. I have a lot of things to do. Jaimini Rishi, he spoke one concept. He said, there were two biggest fools in this world. One was Dashanan and one was Suyodhan. And he said, Dashanan, in spite of being, in spite of seeing one monkey destroy his entire kingdom, he didn't understand. And Suyodhan, in spite of seeing one person destroy his entire army, he still didn't understand. During the Virat Parva, you know, Arjun single-handedly destroyed the entire Kaurava army. That was what Jaimini Rishi was referring to. And Hanumanji burned the entire Lanka. That was what Jaimini Rishi was referring to. So Jaimini Rishi just said these two things. He said, Ravan is the biggest fool because he didn't understand one monkey burnt his entire kingdom. And Suyodhan is the biggest fool because Duryodhan is another name. Because one person destroyed the entire army, he still didn't understand. That's all. Jaimini Rishi was walking away. Janmajay, when he heard this, he said, hey, wait a minute. Who is Suyodhan? Who is Dashanan? You know? And what is this, you know, the whole concept of burning Lanka, and what is the whole concept of, you know, the herding of the cows and, you know, one man destroying the whole army of Suyodhan. Jaimini Rishi said, see, till this point of time I could explain in 1 minute. But now if you want me to explain, I need time. Janmajay said, no problem, take your time, but tell me the story properly. And then Jaimini Rishi spoke the entire Mahabharata. It went on for days and days and days together, and Janmajay was just sitting on the throne all day long. After hearing the whole narration of the Mahabharata, Jaimini Rishi asked him a question. He said, out of the four things, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, which I spoke about in elaborate details, tell me what do you think is the most important one? Janmajay gave an amazing answer. He said, according to me, all the four are not important. According to me, what I have understood is that I want to continue hearing you speak. You continue speaking and I will continue hearing. That is the only thing I have understood in this whole thing. You know? Can you imagine? It began with Jaimini Rishi, Janmajay not even giving 1 minute to Jaimini Rishi, and he became ready to hear for an entire lifetime. And therefore, for us to be able to see Krishna, we need to see Krishna through the eyes of devotees of the Lord. And therefore, Jaimini Rishi, Janmajay heard from Jaimini, Parikshit Maharaj, his father, heard from Shukadeva Goswami, and Arjun, his grandfather, heard from Krishna. All the three of them had the fortune of hearing from great souls. And because they had the fortune of hearing from great souls, they actually became so exalted and they really became very intensely connected with Krishna in their lives. Therefore, for us to be free from chinta, we need to learn to do chintan of Krishna. And that is what this verse is all about. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.